This is a Carlisle ValueCast, brought to you by the Carlisle Group. ValueCast brings you insights from our One Carlisle Network, providing analysis, data, and observations to help you navigate the global economy and top-of-mind issues in news. The Carlisle Group. Invest wisely. Create value.
Welcome to the Carlisle ValueCast, our inaugural audio podcast. I'm Chris Ullman, and I head up our global communications. Today we are joined by Bill Conway, Carlisle's co-founder and co-CEO. Welcome, Bill.
Thanks, Chris.
Bill, it's great to be with you here today. There's a lot of uncertainty in the world today. The U.S. is dithering over its fiscal mess. China's growth is slowing, and the Eurozone teeters on the brink. You've recently characterized this environment as a world of zero return. Is all this uncertainty good or bad for your business? What are the options today? How are you feeling?
Well, uncertainty is, you know, an inherent part of investing. You don't earn the kinds of returns that Carlisle's been able to earn over the last 25 years without taking certain amounts of risk. And risk, by definition, is uncertainty. I do think the world is a dangerous place right now. And I think you cited a lot of the reasons why. But I think people and investors should understand one critical thing, which is the money has to be invested somewhere. And if you spend your time thinking about the problems in Europe or China's slowing or what about the relationship between China and Japan or the problems currently in Algeria, whatever it may be, you can always find problems and reasons not to invest. And frankly, when it's this dangerous, people ought to really be very careful about where they invest their money. But the money has to be invested somewhere. And I'm feeling that that actually creates opportunities for us as opposed to, you know, opportunities to be paralyzed. I think it creates opportunities for us to actually invest the money on behalf of our limited partners.
Talk a little more about this notion of a world of zero return.
When I talk about the world being a world of zero return, I'm really referring to what has happened mainly with the central banks around the world. That in an effort to deal with the aftermath of the 2008 and 2009 financial crisis, as well as some of the other risks that you cited in Europe and the fiscal cliff in America and whatever else, I would say that the central banks flooded the world with liquidity, driving interest rates down to the lowest levels of my lifetime. And that's what I mean by a world of no return. It doesn't mean that certain asset classes and certain geographies people can't invest and make really attractive rates of return. But generally, what has happened, I think, is that one of what historically was considered to be the least risky investments, that is 10-year government debt of the United States or Germany or England, I think that has become some of the riskiest investments just because when interest rates rise, and they ultimately will, investors in those fixed income instruments will have a very tough time.
Some have said that returns for our business are coming down over time. Relative to the world of no return, is that good or bad?
Well, you know, for 10 years or at least 10 years, I've been telling our investors that they should not expect us to be able to sustain the high rates of return that we've earned for them. But somehow for 10 years, we've been able to do it, and I hope that we will continue to be able to do it. What is clear, though, is imagine that we have earned returns that were significantly above the risk-free rate. As the risk-free rate has come down, unless you increase the spread on what you can earn over that risk-free rate, your returns will otherwise come down. Now, for Carlisle, we're really, for most of our businesses, we're absolute return focused. We're not trying to beat some other investor. We're not trying to be in the top quartile. We're not trying to beat the S&P 500 or the Brazilian index or the FTSE or something else. We're trying to be absolute return driven. And I think that, frankly, all this uncertainty probably will over time cause great opportunities to arise because people are going to be afraid. They're going to say, gee whiz, I want to just put my money under the mattress or put it in 90-day treasury bills. And I think that they'll miss a lot of opportunities by having that conservative style.
So let's start in the U.S., right here at home. So in a recent commentary in the Wall Street Journal, you said that the U.S., hands down, was the best place to invest in the world right now. So in light of the fiscal cliff and debt problems and the like, how could this be true?
Well, I still think it's true even 60 days after I wrote that. But remember that Carlisle isn't trying to decide, can I buy this more cheaply a week from now than I can today? Or is this going to be worth a lot more a week from now than it is today.
So it's a long-term perspective.
Yes. Most of the investments we do, we're really saying, is this transaction going to be worth a lot more in 5 years than it is today? And also we're saying, what can we do as Carlyle to help it be worth a lot more? And by that standard, I think the United States is the best place in the world to invest today in general. And I think that for four reasons. First of all, the energy revolution that's occurring in the United States, particularly seen in the availability of natural gas at very, very attractive prices. And frankly, the quantity of natural gas that's available. I think it will cause a revolution that will both be in power generation. More power would be generated by natural gas, which is cleaner. I think natural gas will be used more in the industrial sector, chemicals, fertilizer, whatever. So energy is the first reason. The second reason is housing. The United States has significantly underinvested in housing over the last few years, and that investment is now beginning to pick up and will pick up over time. And so last year, 2012, housing grew about 14%. And we're expecting strong growth for the next several years in housing as this backlog or built-up, pent-up demand begins to become apparent. The third reason is the low interest rates that exist in the United States and around the world. And low interest rates give people incentives to begin to invest the money and to hopefully earn higher returns on that investment. And the fourth reason why I really like investing in the United States is that America is America. And by that I mean that America possesses a set of inherent advantages that have existed for a long time. I'm not saying all these are new, although I think they're perhaps better appreciated now around the world. Advantages like our university system, our hospital system, our capital markets, our libraries, our military, our system of laws and rules and regulatory systems. It's a long way from perfect, but there are just so many things about the United States that make it inherently better than a lot of other places to invest. You know what the rules are here, and I think that the United States is a very good place to invest.
Speaking of risk in the United States, manufacturing. When someone says manufacturing, they probably don't think of America as a place to make things, to make widgets, to build things. Nonetheless, in 2012, 70% of Carlyle's U.S. buyout fund investments were in U.S. manufacturing, which runs counter to that narrative that manufacturing in the U.S. is in decline. What gives you so much confidence in manufacturing in the U.S.?
First of all, the United States is still a manufacturing powerhouse. Other places, manufacturing is strong as well. Asia, for example, where a lot of the manufacturing is based upon some of the advantages that Asia has in terms of labor or their markets or whatever. But the United States is still a manufacturing powerhouse. Look at the automobile industry, the energy industry, other industrial businesses in the United States. What I would say is that the combination of the United States technology, the energy revolution, our currency, makes the United States a pretty attractive place to invest. In addition, remember, a lot of what is manufactured in the United States is going to be consumed in the United States. And therefore, having to ship certain items long distances to the United States and the cost of shipping gives another advantage for those assets, for those businesses and products that might be sold in this country. I think also the fact that most other people think the way your question was premised, the United States is not a manufacturing powerhouse or the United States has these problems and the like, meant that there was a lot less competition to buy some of those assets, which I think made them attractive for us as well.
So let's head 13 time zones to the other side of the world, to China. So the conventional wisdom there is that growth is slowing and returns are down. Exiting is harder. What are you seeing there?
One thing just to comment on China, I've been there a lot of times, and I think China's a great country. What are we seeing in China? Right now, and most recently, China actually has strengthened a bit. In 2012, particularly in the middle of the year, China seemed to weaken. But, you know, a weakened growth rate in China meant that the growth rate was falling to somewhere north of 8% to somewhere in the 6.5% range. And believe me, that would be the envy of the world. I might also point out that in an $8 trillion economy, growing 6 or 6.5% is growing $500 billion a year. It's a spectacular growth rate. And frankly, as we know from mathematics, 6% of $8 trillion is a lot more than 10% of $1 trillion. So the growth rate of China in terms of absolute terms is still growing very strongly.
So how would you characterize your excitement about China right now as a place to deploy capital?
I would say that I might just contrast today, our strategy in China with our strategy in the past in China. It's a very, very important market for Carlyle, and we've been there quite a while. I would say that in the early days, many of our investments were focused outward from China, that is, Chinese exporters. People would make things in China and export them outside the country. Today, most of the investments are focused inward to China, that is, on China's own consumption. For example, the investment that we'd made in China's life insurance business. It's an example where very few people in China have life insurance. As the country gets wealthier, more and more people are going to buy life insurance. And so it was a consumer trend. The move into some of the protein products that we've done in China as well, China fisheries, for example, where we really see that as people get wealthier, they want to eat healthier. They want to have better food. They want to have better air. They want to have a better car. They want to have a better house. They want to have a TV. They want to have air conditioning. And really what we're trying to do is invest in businesses that can take advantage of this increased consumption.
Bill, let's head over to Japan. It's had the worst economic performance among industrialized nations in the past year. Nonetheless, we've been pretty active there. How are you feeling about Japan?
I've been going to Japan for a long time. And ever since I've been going there, even before we started Carlyle, people have been talking about the weakness in the Japanese economy. And the Nikkei average has gone from 30,000, cut by two-thirds. And people have been talking about the shrinking population or the aging population. And I think that creates certain roadblocks to growth. When you have fewer people, they spend less, they make less, they produce less. When you have older people consume less than younger people. So there's this dichotomy of thinking about it as an investing environment and thinking about it as the way the people who live in Japan see it. And I think, frankly, the same thing is true in the investing environment. That people see Toyota and Sony and NEC on one side, but the vast majority of the Japanese economy is thousands of companies that you never heard of. And frankly, those are the companies that we think are undervalued. And that's why we've been making some acquisitions. Let me give you an example. Some companies that are traded on the Japanese Stock Exchange. We think that there are some great opportunities there. And we've actually taken a couple of them private because we didn't think the public stock markets in Japan reflected the appropriate value. And in a private setting, we've been able to increase the cash flow generation to build these businesses. And they've been pretty successful investments for us. Diversey, for example, was a subsidiary of a global company. Walbro was a company that's really a global company that does a lot of business in Japan, but it manufactures in both Japan and elsewhere around the world. So we think there are opportunities there. I would also tell you there is, for us, very little competition in Japan. But we have a team of about 25 investment professionals in Japan, and we've been there. We're on our second fund now. So it's been a long-term commitment to the Japanese market, and it's been a productive place for us to invest.
You sound like a contrarian.
You know, we work for these 1,400 investors, and we're trying to find good places for them to put their money to work. I would not say that I'm a contrarian investor. I think you always have to be on the lookout for where there's going to be attractive investments. Sometimes it can be a special situation. I would say that the herd is usually not a good place to invest, but I would not classify Carlyle as a contrarian investor.
Fueling all of this activity are the credit markets. How are you feeling about them?
Well, first of all, the credit markets now are as good as we've ever seen them. And I think when they are this attractive, that Carlyle and its portfolio companies need to take advantage of those attractive markets. Good credits can borrow very cheaply. They can borrow really all the money they need, maybe not all they'd want in most cases. And they can do this relatively easily. And we've been doing this, particularly in the United States, but also now in Europe. People talk about the European financial crisis and how perhaps there's problems there accessing the credit markets. So let me talk about the credit markets in the United States first. The Federal Reserve has flooded the markets with liquidity. They did this first in response to the housing crisis. But I think today it's also in response to the tough employment market. Employment is just not coming down very, very sharply. And it's stuck just under 8%. And so the Federal Reserve is trying to make certain that there's plenty of liquidity in the market. I might also say that given the various fiscal issues that the United States faces, that the monetary issues have been forced to kind of carry most of the load here on trying to stimulate the economy. And they've done that through very, very low interest rates. So from Carlyle's standpoint, what we have to do, frankly, is take advantage of these very low interest rates. And we do that in two ways. One is with the existing portfolio. We want those businesses to be well-financed. We want them to be relatively conservatively financed. We want them to take advantage of these very low interest rates. Sometimes they'll take advantage of them by just refinancing their existing debt. The rate used to be 7, now the rate is 5. And sometimes they can take advantage of it by paying dividends to their stockholders. And we have done that in the case of a number of our United States portfolio companies. Now, I would say also that I do not expect that this will continue forever.
So as Europe limps along, where do you see opportunity there, Bill?
I'd like to start with a little bit of a non-answer to your question, Chris, which is that one of the premises when we started investing in Europe in the 1990s was that there would be a Europe, that these countries would not necessarily cease being French and German and Spanish and Italian and Dutch, but they would become European, and that never happened. They remain French companies and Spanish companies and German companies. And so I think that Europe has to be thought of a little bit in terms of it is a group of countries, and the countries are different, and they have different problems, different advantages, and different opportunities. I'd say that Mr. Draghi, who runs the European Central Bank, did a fantastic job in 2012. He said that he would do whatever it takes, quote, whatever it takes to defend the euro. And frankly, they didn't have to really do anything. All they had to do was say they were going to do it. And it really has had an enormously beneficial effect. At Carlyle, we tend to be very much driven by data as opposed to by gut instinct. And our data right now is telling us that the European economy in general has begun to bottom. Also, remember, Europe is an enormously wealthy continent. It's got a $15 trillion economy. It is a place where great design, some wonderful technology, enormous wealth on the continent. So there are really pockets there where outstanding investments can be made. I think from the standpoint of Carlyle and its investors, one of the big things is that people are afraid of Europe. Is Greece going to leave? What's going to happen in Italy or Spain or Portugal or Ireland, the so-called pigs or the periphery of Europe? What is going to happen there? Is Germany going to leave the euro? Is Greece going to leave the euro? What about the quality of the banks? Are the banks over-levered dramatically in Europe and the like? But I would say that all that fear can create some real opportunity. And I think we have, over the last couple of years, tried to make some interesting investments that, frankly, where other people haven't gone. Maybe there, we are a little contrarian, to get back to an earlier theme that we spoke about. I think that there are just some places in Europe that really good investments can be made because other people are just afraid to even try it.
Bill, this has been a fascinating discussion. Thanks for joining us on Carlyle ValueCast.
Thank you, Chris.
Thank you for joining us. For more information, go to our website at carlyle.com. This has been a Carlyle ValueCast podcast.